late this morning. We're going to push up against the House session at 10:30. So let's go ahead and open a session of on a public hearing on House Bill 5003, Commission for Women. Today, the Legislative Fiscal Office is represented by Steve Bender, and Karen Segrist acts as our clerk today. And we will go ahead and start this morning. Steve, would you like to give us an introduction before we get started, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, my introductions, I like to sort of stress how each the characteristics of each advocacy commission that's a bit distinct. However, don't let that focus cloud the fact that basically, as with the other advocacy commissions, they have very similar roles in promoting equality for the constituencies that they are have been established to assist. The Commission for Women works to establish equality for women in Oregon, but some of the more distinct or unique features of this commission are that, first of all, this commission's budget is much larger than any of the other advocacy commissions, not in terms of the state support, the general fund support, which is very similar to the level for the of the other three, but in terms of other funds that the commission has available to it and that it spends. In fact, this commission has three employees, whereas the others have one. But again, only one of the employees here with the Commission for Women is supported by the general fund. The other two are all financed through the commission's administration of a federal grant program under the AmeriCorps program. They are administering one of the AmeriCorps programs called the Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children program. So this commission actually has is now functioning as a direct service provider. What this program does is it assists domestic violence victims. So there's that component of the commission's operations, as well as the general fund or state-supported component that focuses on advocacy and is not, you know, is entirely separate from this federal program. But the budget for this commission, as approved during this session, was over $900,000, with most of the money coming from this federal grant. Another way in which this commission is distinct from the other commissions is that it has been more successful in generating other funds through donations and through partnerships with businesses and other sources. So, and distinctive as well is that this commission has fundraising activities that raise funds in excess of the costs of providing certain programs that funds are being specifically raised for. So you saw that, for example, the Hispanic Commission was raising a lot of funds for their Latino Youth Summit program, but those funds were basically used for that program. Similarly, the Asian Commission was raising funds for its Asian Pacific Heritage Month celebration, but those funds were used specifically for that program. The Commission for Women has a number of fundraising efforts where they do get funds that are used or designated for specific programs, but they have also been able to raise funds that are not dedicated to a specific program but are then available to assist the Commission in all of its functions. Because of this, the Commission does have other fund balances, and even though, as with the other three, general fund support is suspended as of April 1st, for this Commission, there are sufficient other fund balances that the Commission should continue to be able to employ their executive director through the remainder of this biennium and perhaps for some time into the next biennium, even if they don't raise additional funds. Now, of course, this means that those funds would not be available for other uses, but they would be able to keep the commission operating with paid staff. So unless there are any questions.
Thank you very much, Steve. I hope that it's taken that we're going to need to go ahead and start calling folks just after a bit, Karen, but this is a subcommittee of the subcommittee, I guess, at that particular point. So we will go ahead then. I recognize former State Senator, Senator Cliff Trobe. Welcome, Senator. It's nice to have you here this morning with us, and we're honored that you would be here and recognize your great advocacy for these commissions and particularly for the Commission on Women's Affairs. Let's go ahead and start with Commission Chair Diana Hines and Rosalind Farrington. Senator Trobe?
You
bet. Please. Absolutely. Thank you.
You start us off, Senator Trobe.
Hi, I'm former Senator Cliff Trobe, a colleague of the chair, and many of the other members on the committee. Hopefully, they'll arrive so I can greet them as well. I was designated by Senate President Durfler last session to be the Senate's member of the Women's Commission. I was really honored and pleased to do that, and it's been a great associationship with some really fine people. I was also pleased because my wife previously had been a member of the commission when it was the Governor's Commission for the Status of Women, and the commission's been around since 1964, I believe, which is a long time, and it served a very important need. When my wife was a member, they were especially concerned about pay equity issues for women, and they were rather intense at that point, and I know she was involved in that. I've been pleased to be a member to see what they're now doing, the situation I think that they were set up to address, kind of an unequal treatment of women, has improved over time, no question about that, but there's clearly still are major problems. I know in our community we've been involved with something called CARDVA, which is the Center Against Rape and Domestic Violence, and my wife and I both have contributed to that organization because they do such good jobs of finding families that are really torn by various kinds of abuse, that spousal abuse and other kinds of things that affect the family and affect the children, and they need help. And one of the things this commission has been doing lately is the AmeriCorps program, which they're helping to administer that program, which really does provide substantial help in abusive situations for women and children who find themselves there. And that problem hasn't gone away. It's still with us, and it's still intense. So I think this commission has a lot of good things that it can continue to do if it's allowed to. And yes, it's true that the small amount of general fund we put into the commission doesn't buy a whole lot, or does buy a whole lot, but it's not a lot of money, and they raise a lot of additional money so that they can continue to do the things that they're doing. But that general fund support is very crucial. And so I would urge you to keep that there as a base and allow them the opportunity to raise other funds and to continue the good work that they do.
Thank you, Senator Trobe. Again, it's an honor to have you here and recognize your many years of service both to these institutions and the bicameral status, as well as your active commitment to the community. Thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Diane?
Thank you very much, Senator Trobe. Good morning, Mr. Chair. I would say members of the committee, but there are none other here. For the record, my name is Diane Hines. I'm the chair of the Oregon Commission for Women, and my permanent residence is Warrenton, Oregon. I'll start our presentation by reading our mission to you, although you have it in front of you. It sets the tone for our presentation. The Commission for Women works for the implementation and establishment of economic, social, legal, and political equality for women and maintains a continuing assessment of the issues and needs confronting the women of Oregon. And from that mission, we have developed a set of fairly lofty goals to accomplish our mission. We annually review our goals and develop a strategic plan by which to accomplish our goals. So I'll just run through the goals with you quickly. And then Rosalind will kind of fill out the the detail of our activities and that we by which we accomplish our goals, which are to advocate for cultural, ethnic, gender, age, and ability diversity in the workplace, educational system, and other venues, and seek meaningful protection against discrimination. To advocate for full and equal treatment of women under the law. To advocate for the equal opportunity and treatment for women in employment. These sound wonderful, don't they?
Where is that listed at?
We're on page 3 of our presentation in your binder under the...
Okay. Right. Beg your pardon. I was looking in the statute for some of those kinds of things, so this is your goals.
And our goals are based on the statutory mandates. To ensure that women in need of housing, legal help, food, education, health care, counseling, business startup capital, etc., have access to information and resources. To advocate for equality of educational and training opportunities for women in Oregon. To celebrate with and educate Oregonians about women's achievement in all areas. And to increase the viability and visibility of the Commission for Women. Our presentation today is going to consist of my talking to you about the commission itself, and then about its history and commissioners and our activities. And then Rosalyn is going to talk to you about the agency's activities and budget detail. So just briefly, our history. Senator Tro gave you the historical history, which was that in 1964, Governor Hatfield established the Commission on the Status of Women to advise him about the needs and concerns of Oregon women. In 1983, Governor Attia gave the Commission independent agency status and a directive to continue its mission to strive for the implementation of programs and policies benefiting women. And for most of that decade and the next, the Commission has focused its limited resources on advocating for women's issues with the Governor and the Legislature. In 1985, the Commission hosted its first Women of Achievement Awards Dinner, which has become our banner event and is a source of revenue as well as our ability to really look at what the women in Oregon are doing and celebrate that. We have worked with the legislature and interested parties on women's health and wellness. We published in 95 and again in 97 the Oregon Women in the Law book, giving women an understanding of how law in Oregon affects their personal lives. In 97, our funding was reduced and we began doing our own fundraising. And that was a big shift for the commissioners, as you can well imagine. That wasn't what was their statutory mandate, and has become sort of a distraction for the work that we are trying to do. In 98, we began publishing our quarterly newspaper and organizing and presenting seminars informing women on health issues. In 2001, we took over the administration of the AmeriCorps program, which is the program that Senator Tro discussed, Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children, which brings us to our current status. So as you can see, we've been working pretty hard to fulfill our mandate as well as expand on the goals of the commission. I'd like to introduce to you the current commissioners and those who are here today.
There are 11 commissioners, is that right?
There are 11 commissioners.
Okay.
And when I introduce those who are here today, I hope they'll stand up and be counted. Candace Barto is from Grants Pass, and I don't believe she's here. Addie Jean Hayes from Portland. Nancy Padilla from Hermiston. Anna Willman from Roseburg. Sonia Svensson from Salem, and Sonia is our vice chair. Bryn Hazel is from Sisters. Suzanne Miller from Portland. Victoria Wenger from Portland. And Representative Kelly Worth, who is here today. She is our Senate seat is vacant at this time. We're hoping to have somebody assigned to us quickly.
It appeared to be very amply filled.
More than ample. Perfectly.
We'd love to have you back if you would put your ample weight into a vacant seat. Our most immediate past commissioners are Jean-Marie Diehl-Schneider from Bend, Senator Trove from Corvallis, Gloria Roy, who was our past chair from Eugene, and Karen Rutan from Eugene. Just so you know what we've been up to, we meet once a month, or had been meeting over the biennium once a month, all over the state in Astoria and Bend and Eugene, Portland, Salem. At our annual meeting in Astoria last year, we decided that we would meet every other month and that the commissioners would be responsible for a focus meeting at each of our meetings. So we're lengthening the meetings and trying to get information to inform the legislature in its decision-making process around issues like child care, child custody, legislative issues. We have already had the legislative priorities and the child care focus meetings, and that information will be made available to the legislature soon. The commission has four subcommittees. One of them is brand new. We have a visioning committee, which we would like to look at where we are and look at where we want to be 2 years from now and 5 years from now and 10 years from now. And we have a legislative committee, which is very active during the session in informing the legislature about the bills and issues of concern to women. We have a committee that for the Women of Achievement Awards Dinner that starts convening about now, because it's a lengthy process to put that that event together. And we, as of our last meeting, established a fundraising committee looking at the challenges that are before us right now. So, that was the ghost of a committee member. I'd like to introduce Rosalind Farrington to you, and I'm sure Rosalind needs no introduction, and she's going to talk to you about the agency's activity. Oh, I have one question of you before we go forward. Since we are in a fundraising mode right now, we wanted and have been asked by our partners and contributors about what happens to the money that we raise into other funds. If that money is secure for the use of the commission exclusively and will not be rolled into general fund, but for any reason?
That's an excellent question, Diana. Normally, and the best of times, I tell you to raise away, and there shouldn't be ever any problems. However, recognizing also that recently as the sixth special session, which was held sometime this past month, mm-hmm. that what has happened is that funds that were raised on behalf of tobacco taxes, for instance, which were raised, a portion of which belonged to local governments, including transportation, special transportation units, were put basically on notice that if the state budget goes beyond another $150 million in the red in the May forecast, that those funds, including lottery funds which belong to counties and then the city, county, and local transit district portion of tobacco funds would be available to basically be converted by the state over to general fund to cover the balances. Now, that having been said, I would say this, that I think that you probably have to try and take any money that had been raised specifically by the advocacy commissions from other third sources. These are not from taxpaying entities within the state of Oregon.
By private donations.
But by private donations, that would be very, very difficult. As a matter of fact, the Cultural Trust has raised money by private donation, And I don't know that we have a legal opinion that it was reserved aside, but it certainly was not tampered with all of the rest of the tampering that went on with the cultural trust, because those funds had been raised by third parties with the specific intention that those funds be utilized by the cultural trust for its original purpose. So I guess I'd have to say that that would only happen by rolling steamrollers over about 90 people in this building, and I don't see that happening.
Right.
And so,
so you feel that we're safe in moving forward with a fundraising strategy?
As safe as you can be in this economy with 90 legislators running around the building looking under every seat cushion for any pennies
for
that we can. We talked about baked good sales and car washes out in front of the Capitol to raise money, but it's been we've had some very difficult times. Colleagues, the chair of the commission, Diane Hines, has indicated or has questioned, are the other funds which the Commission on Women are raising, are they safe from the legislature's grab? And I'm telling them on behalf of this committee they are, but I'll need your support in your respective chambers and houses that we absolutely maintain that. If I don't care how deep we go, those funds are sacred and belong to you as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Chair, you want to hear an affirmation on the record, and first of all, I'd like to acknowledge Diane, who is a constituent and a friend. Welcome.
Thank you.
That's money they went out through enterprise, ingenuity, persuasion, and dogged hard work and raised. And I think that's your money.
Okay. We're not raising money for the State General Fund. We're actually raising money for
if you're
the
offering, however,
no,
we
no,
might
no,
have
no, we're not.
Mr. Chair, I would echo Representative Johnson that I know this body, and I really would have to say I think generally the body as a whole would not go after funds that you have specifically raised for a specific purpose. You know, there are. We did, however, tell that to the cities and counties too.
Uh-oh.
Well, I'm not going to go. I'm going to stay on the record. I'm not going to come after you.
Okay. Okay.
I can't
we have it on the record.
You've got it from me. I'm not going to do that.
Well, and we do have the cultural trust, which raised money separately and apart from any appropriation by the legislature. And those funds have been treated separately and sacredly by this body as we've moved forward, allowing them to expend them for their original purposes for which they were charitably raised.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I think there's an issue of donative intent. When someone sits down and writes a check, and I know from scrutinizing some of the receipts, people are making very modest contributions that may represent a large percentage, but they're making modest contributions because they care about the work of the commissions, and I'm sure that applies across all of the commissions. I think that there's not only a moral issue, but I think there's a legal issue with donative intent.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, Senator or Representative, having a legalistic background. I appreciate your saying that. That's something I really have not been able to say, but I would say this, that the steamrollers are going to have to get out, run over a whole bunch of us to take their money away that they've raised and have worked so hard to privately raise. Rosalind, welcome. Nice to have you here. As the chair has indicated, you're not a stranger to us, but please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Rosalind Barrington. I'm the executive director of the Commission for Women, have been with the commission for 3 years in April. It's been an experience, I'll tell you. I'm going to talk to you today. I'm on page 9 of the handout that we presented to you this morning. And I'm going to briefly go through the programs and activities that we've been involved in over this biennium. And I just have to say, I began this legislative session hopeful, kind of maybe naively hopeful, but really hopeful in the fact that I knew the work we've been doing at the Commission for Women. I knew that we had met every legislative mandate that you folks have thrown at us, you know, whether we thought they were reasonable or not. And I also knew that part of the work of the commission was to do advocacy work, and we've really been working hard to become a place. I often refer to us as Switzerland. So we've really been working hard to become a nonpartisan place where everybody can come from it for information. And my intent this session was to really start working the legislative process a lot more in providing white sheets on legislative issues that came up of importance to women, so that the members of this body would begin to see us as a resource. We'd begin to see us as a source of information on women's issues. So in an area where you didn't have expertise, you would come to us. So that was sort of my intention, starting this session. And, you know, and I also have to say that when I started with the Commission for Women, I had a few very clear mandates. One was, don't go to the legislature asking for money. The other was, don't lobby. And that was, you know, that was pretty clear. And the other was, you know, raise money and, you know, and create programs and do projects. Those were pretty clearly, you know, the information that I got from former executive directors, from the commission itself, and from, you know, everybody I basically talked to. And we've really worked hard over these last 3 years to create that kind of place for the commission. We like to call it, well, I like to call it the beloved community, a place where everybody's welcome, where everybody has a voice, and everybody can come and feel welcome. And I think we've really done an outstanding job in creating that, as well as providing valuable services, life-saving, life-enhancing services and information to the women of Oregon. And I believe that when we help women, we help children, we help men, and we really help all of Oregonians. So that said, I'm going to launch into kind of the activities and what we've been doing and our successes. And I'll start with the Women of Achievement Awards Dinner. We've done it for 18 years. We've honored over 45 Oregon women. And during this biennium, we had over 600 attendees at the dinner. The dinner in 2001, we had about 250, and the dinner 2002, we had 350. So it was just fabulous to see. People kept calling and wanting tickets. It was just fabulous to see that huge jump in, you know, in support of the Commission for Women and in affirmation for the women that we've honored. And at the beginning of the last legislative session, I brought around to you, for the first time we'd set what we thought were measurable performance measures, I brought them around to you, talked to you about them and how we were going to achieve them. And where they're applicable in here, I put them at the bottom of the page. So our performance measure around the dinner was to increase the profit by 15%, and we actually increased the profit by 35%. So we're really excited about that. And if I had more time and more energy and more support, what we'd like to do is get some underlying sponsors for the dinner. So somebody, some sponsors, a couple of sponsors who will give $5,000 each to underwrite the cost of the dinner, so it's more of a profit maker for the commission. But to get those big donations, you have to have the time and the energy to build those relationships. And basically what we've gotten is, because we've sent out letters to people who've continually supported the dinner and new organizations who will give $1,000 or who will give $500, but I haven't really had the time and the energy to cultivate the relationships that it takes to get $5,000 donors. And that's been another one of my underlying intentions for what I want to see happen with the dinner and the continued growth of the Commission for Women. And I have to say, we're committed to honoring women from all parts of the states and honoring women from all ethnic backgrounds and also honoring women, the whole range of women. One of the women we honored, Kathleen Margram from Florence, wasn't she's not a politician. She wasn't the president of a university or anything like that. She was just a woman who had been on welfare, who'd gotten off welfare, who had used the system effectively and was now a leader in her community. You know, so we make sure so not everybody we honor is going to bring six tables with them to the dinner. You know, and so we're not driven by that. We're really driven by the work that women are doing and really committed to, you know, and we have debate about that. I remember the selection process during that year, we had six commissioners. And so the vote, you know, got deadlocked a couple times when you came down to who were the final three we were going to honor. And we ended up deciding to honor four, but one ended up dropping out in order to, you know, to accommodate everybody. So that's what we're doing around Women of Achievement Awards Dinner. And I'll just go through this, so if you have any questions in the meantime, just feel free to stop me.
And you can keep your presentation to about 30,000 foot level too, and we'll,
okay,
because I know that we do have some folks signed up to testify, Rosalind.
Chair Butler.
Yes, Representative Johnson recognized.
After you just admonished us, time is of the essence, I'm going to stop with a question. do you think that the dinner is a model for fundraising. We're trying to help all of the commissions figure out how they can raise both the profile of what they're doing and raise additional dollars. I know that putting on those dinners, whether it's your dinner or any fundraising dinner, is devilishly time-consuming. But do you think that in the main that's a good fundraising mechanism, and do you think that corporate sponsors would be available regardless of whether it's Hispanic, Asian, women, black?
I believe that corporate sponsors are available, and I think a lot of it depends on relationship, because, like, we couldn't get Nike to give us a dollar, and I went to some other dinner, and they were, like, you know, giving thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm like, well, what's that about? And come to find out that a lot of Nike is somebody knew a Nike employee who said, hey, sponsor this event. So a lot of it is about building that relationship. But to answer your question, excuse me, Representative Butler, Representative Johnson, is that, yes, I think it's a fine model. I think that... I think there are other models that work as well. And I think the Commission for Women has been doing this dinner for almost 20 years, and we don't spend every dime we raise from the dinner. So over 20 years, that has built up our reserve, which is why we're in a little bit different, which is part of the reason we're in a little bit of a different position than the other advocacy commissions.
Thank you.
So I will go on. I'm now moving to page 11, and I'll talk about the agency activities. And part of what we're doing is education and empowerment seminars. We believe the best way to advocate for women is to help them become their own best advocates. And we do two seminars. We do a financial wellness seminar. We also do a women's health seminar. And we did that based on the number of calls that come into our office. We get calls, you know, every week from women who want to start their own business, who want to go back to school, who don't know where to go for resources. And so we decided that we've been really successful at the women's health models. We decided that we could use the same model for women in financial wellness. And during the biennium, we had three seminars in three communities, Albany, Roseburg, and Salem. And we partnered with the Displaced Homemaker programs at the community college to put on these seminars, and we also partnered with some business women who'd been successful entrepreneurs who came out and talked to the crowd about how they can be entrepreneurs, and those were really successful. We planned on doing two. We ended up doing three, and, you know, women loved it, and, you know, we get cards and notes from people talking about how these seminars help them to move forward and take the next step in their life.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Winter.
Speaking of entrepreneur seminars, how much of that is coordinated with or could be done by the agency who's responsible for minority and women entrepreneurship programs?
Chair Butler, Senator John, or Senator Winters, I think my understanding is what Lydia Mendez in the governor's office does is she helps people get registered to get registered as small women-owned businesses, but I don't know that they do seminars in this vein. So we'd have to invite her in to talk about, you know, what they do and whether this is part of what they do. We really worked hard to coordinate with, you know, the local community colleges who work with displaced homemakers and partner with them in putting on the seminar. So they're reaching folks not only for our seminars but for their program.
Does the Business and Consumer Affairs Office do any of this?
Not that we know of.
One of the things that, and I'm always mindful when we've got limited resources, is that it would be nice if your organization helps to spur those agencies who are responsible for these activities so that they get in the habit routinely of doing them. I'm very mindful that sometimes it's difficult just to be the advocate, you know, for change. But I also know that unless you get the agencies who are responsible for it to begin seeing the needs of women and minorities differently so that they make it a part of their ongoing process, it continues where you're developing program rather than getting the system to change. And that's why I raised that particular issue, looking at those agencies who do have a responsibility, you know, to be doing some of this. And I just would like to encourage, I appreciate the workshops, just like to encourage you to just kind of poke a little bit.
Senator, that point is very well taken. We do have small SBDC small business development centers throughout the state who are charged with this. And then there are federal funds that flow into those agencies which are specifically aimed at this. And I, you know, I don't see the Commission for Women out preparing loan applications, but they certainly act as a conduit to make sure that those women get there. And I think it's incumbent upon the director, the executive director, and the staff to know that those programs are there. And I think that's one thing we have been blessed with, particularly in the this commission. I think at coming up 3 years, you're probably the longest executive director that we've had for this and other commissions for a long time. So, but it's incumbent that those folks understand what the other resources are and be able to at least have a quick dialogue so that you can put people together in a hurry for those, because there are rather substantial funds, and much of that funding comes from the federal government, and they got big machines back there that print off that money, and we don't have that luxury in a budget balancing crisis that we're in today. Please proceed, and I'm going to need to move you now to about the 40,000-foot level, Rosalind, and I just found out that the Senate meets at 10 o'clock this morning. So I would like to go ahead and finish with your presentation, have Satish give us his presentation from Budget and Management, and then have an opportunity for the senators to hear the public testimony. And then if we need to, as I promised when I came in, I anticipate that I'll stay here until 10:30 listening to your testimony if we need to move back to a lower level.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will skip all this wonderful stuff I prepared for you and
we do have
try and do the highlights. And right. Really, you know, I've met with all of you who
Ms.
were
Chair,
available.
I have to say something because it's very important for me. I appreciate the bold type that you've used to give your report. For an individual who is becoming more and more chronologically advantaged over time, and Cliff knows what I'm talking about. The eyesight, you know, the eyesight really appreciates when the type is bold. So thank you.
Thank you. In summary, I think that I want to talk a little bit about the AmeriCorps program, because that's sort of the sort of biggest change that we've made over the last couple of years. And the AmeriCorps program provides AmeriCorps members in counties throughout Oregon and cities throughout Oregon who speak to, if you look at page 18 of my presentation, we think that we, even though we're not directly linked to the Oregon benchmarks, we believe that our AmeriCorps program speaks to three of the Oregon benchmarks. One is the civic engagement one, so we provide volunteers and provide the ability for local community organizations to expand their volunteer capabilities. Also, we believe we speak to the key benchmark for child abuse and neglect. Our chair has told the story of one of our AmeriCorps members who does community education presentations and how one of the young women in the class came to her afterwards and said that she and her sister both had been being sexually abused by their stepfather, and because of this AmeriCorps member, they were able to stop that. So I think we directly, and that's just one story that we know of how this program is out there helping save lives of women and children.
Rosalind, does the AmeriCorps commitment to the commission require a state match by any possible?
The AmeriCorps, the host sites, which are the community organizations that host the AmeriCorps members, pay $3,700 approximately to the Commission for Women to meet that match. And
okay,
we've had
so
no problem
no
filling all our slots.
Match,
there is no general fund match now.
All right, thank you.
And finally, and the last couple pages of this is what we'll do if we have continued money and what we'd like, programs that we would like to implement.
What page is that on?
And that's on page 19 and 20. The Oregon Women's Resource Program is something that I've been committed to since I came to the Commission for Women, because it would provide, you know, information and referrals statewide is the dream of it, to have a county partner in every county would help us build a resource base in that county for women. We'd put it in print, we'd put it on the web, and we'd have it in our office, so when women called in looking for that kind of information, we'd be able to provide it. That's something we did some grant writing around
early in the biennium, but a lot of funders, number one, we do have the same 501c3 problem that the other advocacy commissions have, and a lot of funders don't want to fund paper stuff. They want to fund, you know, feeding baby stuff. And but I'm committed to, which is a fine thing to fund, but I'm really committed to this program, and if we have extra revenue, this is one of the things we want to implement. And the Oregon Women in the Law book, we haven't updated it since 1997. We generally update it after a legislative session. We want to update that as well. And finally, I just hope that we find a way to keep these advocacy commissions and to provide state support in part for the advocacy commissions. I mean, we already have major fundraising challenges being a state agency. And having the state pay for our operating costs makes some of those challenges a little bit easier. And so now we're raising money for our own operating costs. And it puts us, and our commitment at the Commission for Women has been to not compete with other women-serving organizations for funds. This AmeriCorps program came to us because it was a gap, and they couldn't find the right home for it, and they found us as the right fit for us. The programs we do is we try to fill where there's not, where there's demonstrated not somebody doing that already, like the seminars on health. And the people trust us because we're a state entity. So if, you know, some bank put on a seminar, people might not go because they think the bank is, you know, trying to sell them their wares. But if us as a state agency puts it on, they trust us that we're there just to provide them information to enhance their lives and make them better citizens. So on that, I will conclude, and I'm definitely available for questions.
Thank you very much, Rosalyn. Are there specific questions, additional questions for Ms. Franklin? Yes, I beg your pardon, Senator. Please, Senator Devlin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question we've asked the other commissions, actually, and you appear very competent in your areas of expertise. Every one of the commissions has remarked about the difficulty raising money since you are clearly a governmental entity. And I'm not an attorney. And is there some way that we could change what you are, in essence, still keep you with a clear governmental relationship so that you have the benefits of that, and so that you may move out of that enough so that funders might be more receptive to you?
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, I've been, you know, heard that question every day that I've been sitting in this room. And there are many models. And there's also, I think we think it's really important that we remain a state agency and that the state does have an obligation to provide a voice for the voiceless folks, women and people of color. But there is, you know, and thinking about this, that's what our visioning committee was doing. You know, they were going to say, this is what we want to be in 5 and 10 years, and this is the best mechanism for us to get there. We can stay a state agency. There's some commissions for women have Friends of the Commission for Women, which is a separate 501c3 arm that raises money for the work of the commission. So that's a model that we could stay a state agency and have that other entity that would work.
Friends of Women is what it's called?
Friends of the Commission.
Friends of the Commission.
You know, like Friends of Trees. You know, it's like that raises money for the work of the commission.
That's already set up as a nonprofit.
And not in our state, but in other states. And there's also, you know, and there's a conversation going on about becoming a semi-independent state agency. But semi-independent state agencies don't get any general fund, and you're still a state agency, so you still run into foundations. You know, their checkoff list. One of the questions is, are you a 501c3? If you check no, many foundations, you know, we don't even apply to them. So then we try to apply to Meyer or someone else who does fund state entities. But again, you know, we run into the problem of, are we chasing, you know, their priorities, or are we trying to fund what we think our priorities are and the priorities of the commission are? I think there's lots of models that can work, and I think that giving the right kind of support, all these commissions could be successful. I think that, but I think part of what I think is that that some members of the body want to be successful without giving us money, and I think that with the right tutoring and the right mentoring,
you know, we could all be successful. And I think that if I had, here's my dream, I'll be brief, if I had an administrator who could take care of all the business of being a state agency, which they haven't even talked about, which we are faced with every day. If I had an administrator who could take care of all that business and an administrative assistant who could answer the phones and, you know, do the mail, then that would free up a good percent of my time to be out there to be a fundraiser. You know, and so I think that, you know, I think that it's, you know, and you might, it might be a little risky venture, but I think if you provided that sort of mentoring for all of us for another biennium, then I think you'd have us going in the direction that you want to go. And I have to say that I think that some of the other commissions are going in that direction, but they're one-person entities, so it takes longer to turn the ship around.
Rosalind, the other 1.8 staff, do they assist with answering the phone or opening
yes,
the mail?
Our AmeriCorps program manager, she just is totally AmeriCorps. The administrative assistant works part-time, so she answers the phones and opens the mail.
Okay,
and that's what's freed, that's part in part okay. What's freed me up some.
Okay, Representative Johnson?
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Devlin and I have talked about a number of different models in trying to figure out how this would work. Do you see any possibility for success in providing funds for a finite period of time so that all of the advocacy commissions are really under the gun? It gives them a fundraising opportunity, but it says at a point certain the state won't be responsible, but instead of terminating state support right now, having some kind of a gentle glide slope. Too dangerous?
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I think before you give us less, you need to give us more. Before you give us less, you need to give us more, and you need to give us a fair chance. And I think that because we're all operating on budgets that just pay for the salary of the executive director. And unless you have somebody who comes in with the same skill sets that I have and the same – so you need the skill sets that I have. You also need the board that I have, and you also need to be able to deal with the cultural sensitivities for each community. You know, then we can do what we do on what we do. But we need more before you give us less. And I think that, you know, I think the Commission for Women, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, I think in 2 years, given the right kind of support, you know, we could be more independent. Even though we do firmly believe that, you know, that the state needs to continue to support the commissions at a basic level.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Winters is recognized.
Just some observations, and I think there is clearly, if you look at the resource base and what's available to the Women's Commission versus the other commissions and the length of time that they have been in existence, clearly the Women's Commission is on a much more solid footing than the other commissions. And I have to put that out there because I think it's absolutely correct. The other thing with the Women's Commission, unlike the other commissions, they have had over the years a stronger, if you will, individuals. It's easier to appeal to people to support the Women's Commission than it has the other commissions. And I think this body, when we look at these issues, that we have to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk in terms of fundraising, and I've done that before too, clearly they have, let's say, they have more opportunities of doing fundraising than the other commissions do. And it's just a fact of our environment. And I need to put that out there because I don't think we can say they're on a level playing field because they're not. You know, clearly they are not. The Black Commission and the Asian Commission and the Hispanic Commission are not on the same level as when you talk about the Women's Commission. Because when I look at the roster over the years of who's been involved in the Women's Commission, it's certainly a higher profile of individuals than when I look at the other commissions. So,
appreciate it. If there are no further questions, we'll have Mr. Rupatia come up. Thank you, Senator. Diane, thank you for your time.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee. Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I will talk to you about the Governor's Budget for the Commission for Women for the 2003-2005 biennium. We turn to page 2 of my presentation document. The budget consists of $320,713 total funds. You will notice that this is nearly a 66% decrease from the 2001-2003 legislatively approved budget for the fifth special session. And the reason you see this decrease is due to the expiration of the AmeriCorps Community in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children grant program in September of 2003. The commission was appointed as the grant administrator of this program for 2 years, starting September 2001. So unless it gets extended, this program ends, and if the commission is approved again to be the grant administrator, they would have to appear before the emergency board. The budget consists general fund and other funds. General fund is 53.4% and other funds is 46.6%. As you heard earlier, the commission has been very successful in fundraising. In 1999-01, the commission raised $67,808 in donations and contributions. In 01-03, it's estimated that the commission will raise $712,850, and this is due to the AmeriCorps program. And in 2003-2005, in the government's balanced budget, it's assumed that the commission will raise $128,978. During the second and the fifth special session, the commission's budget was reduced. During the second special session, there was a reduction of $2,838 general fund. And on the fifth special session, there was a reduction of $5,161 general fund. In the third special session, there was an increase of $4,177 general fund and $10,631 other funds for employee compensation adjustments. The governor's budget, it enables the agency to continue its existing operations. It provides $171,339 general fund to pay for the executive director's salary and for limited office expenses. It allows the commission to administer the AmeriCorps program until September 2003. And it allows the commission to spend the donations and grants it received for program activities. Looking at the expenditure categories, 51% of the budget is personal services, 12% is special payments, and 37% is services and supplies. Now, how was the governor's budget developed? The starting point was the 2001-2003 legislatively adopted budget. This consisted of $220,916 total funds. At the September 2001 meeting of the emergency board, there was an increase of $707,742 other funds as a result of the commission being made the grant administrator for the AmeriCorps program for a two-year period. And in the second special session, there was a reduction of $2,838 general fund. Next, we have the base budget adjustments, where you see a reduction of $129,301 total funds. These reductions are due to the phasing out of the AmeriCorps program. There are also two essential packages. Package 010 provides for decrease in mass transit taxes. It's a decrease of $550 total funds. And package 020 provides for program adjustments. This is the adjustment for funding of the AmeriCorps program, which will phase out in September 2003. This is a decrease of $506,230 other funds. And we also have the standard inflationary increases and increase in state government service charges, consisting of $8,681 total funds. You will see three policy packages. Package 100, it allows the agency to administer the AmeriCorps program for 3 months into the next biennium. And package 091 and 092, they wash out each other, or they balance each other. Package 091 is a reduction of $10,683 general fund, an increase of $10,680 other funds. This is the result of the fifth special session. So what we did is we reduced the general fund, and unlike other advocacy commissions, since this commission has other funds, backfilled the general fund with other funds. Package 092, it restores what was the general fund that was reduced in package 091. So basically, the governor's budget maintains the commission as a whole.
And Satish, through Budget Management and Department of Administrative Services, the Department of Administrative Services has looked at the AmeriCorps contract, and it does extend through the time. Is it renewable at that time? Has to be renegotiated at that time, do you know?
Mr. Chair, the Commission has already applied to be for an extension, and they haven't heard anything yet.
I see some folks shaking their heads yes, so thank you very much. Okay. Are there questions of Ms. Rupadia? Seeing none, thank you very much. You must have done an excellent job. I appreciate it. So thank you. With that, we have one lady who has come over 100 miles, Anna Willman, and we need you to come forward, Anna. Thank you very much for traveling all the way from Roseburg.
Thank you very much. My name is Anna Willman. I'm a commissioner for the Oregon Commission for Women, and I live in Roseburg, Oregon. And actually, I didn't come here intending to speak, but I was sitting here and had this thought and thought, well, it's sort of a philosophical point, really. I hear it a lot in the community. We hear it everywhere. It's like, you know, well, how can we justify funding something like the Commission for Women when there are seniors who aren't getting their meds and people are being cut off of medical health and schools hours are being shortened and things like that. And I just really feel strongly, and I'm sure you probably agree, but I need to say it for the record, that is totally the wrong way to pose this question. As a government, we have responsibilities to the people of Oregon to perform certain things. And that's, you may have a philosophical debate about what your responsibilities are or not. But you can't say, well, we have these responsibilities, but we're only going to take care of some of them. We either have to take care of all of them, or we have to recognize we're not governing. And it's really that simple. And to say that we will not meet, as a government, as a state, we will not meet our obligations to minorities and women and people who are voiceless otherwise in the community because we want to meet another need, it doesn't make sense. We have to find a way to do what we are supposed to do as a society. And as my representatives and senators, that's what you signed on for. So I know it's hard, and I just wanted to say that we can't pose it either or. We have to do what we have to do, and we have to find a way to do it.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right now it is either or. So give us your guidance and your thoughts about how to fill that gap.
Well, I sort of like the idea of bake sales. I mean, the reality is, we cannot do everything we're supposed to do with the money that we have right now because of the economic situation and the repeated rejection of taxpayers of tax increases. But nevertheless, somehow funds have to be found. We've put ourselves in a box. We have to find a way out. And I'm hoping that we have elected to our legislature creative enough people who will be able to find a way to get the money that's needed to meet the needs of the people of Oregon. And all of the needs need to be met, not just some. We can't set it up that way. It's somehow posing the question that way is wrong. It's not appropriate, and it's morally wrong. So I know you've got a tough job. I'm not saying, oh, it's easy, you know, snap your fingers and do it. But somehow you have to do it. You can't turn your back on some people, some citizens, in order to serve others. These are all important issues.
Senator Winters?
Mr. Chair, I have to follow along with Representative Jones. I have the distinct, whether you can call it fortunate or unfortunate, responsibility of chairing Ways and Means Human Services budget. And my choices are whether or not someone does not get their medication, or whether you have a child who has been abused, neglected, and they don't get service, or whether someone doesn't have food in their stomach or no place to sleep. And, you know, if I'm setting priorities, my priority will be that I want to be certain that the most vulnerable in our society are getting the services. And I do believe that government has a responsibility for assuring that we protect children, that we give prescriptions to the seniors. And unfortunately, we are in a situation as a body to have to make some very, very tough decisions. The voters decided that they did not want to increase taxes, you know, so they sent us a message. And so we, unlike the federal government, cannot print or operate under a deficit. Oregon's Constitution requires that we must balance this budget. And I think sometimes maybe the public doesn't understand when they sent us here that we do have some constitutional responsibilities in this building. I know it's tough. None of us sitting in either my committee or this one like to even think about the thought of having to do reductions and rollback. But we must. The other part of this engine is that I don't think any of us in our wildest dream would have thought we were going to have 9/11. None of us in our wildest thought would have thought that the economy would be where it is today. But like a family, and I'm sure that you've raised one, when times are tough, we have to look at those items that keep our families intact, that feed them, clothe them, house them, and shelter them in order so we can survive what is the depressions that some of us, I have to remind my colleagues, that in the late 50s, some call it a recession, I call it a depression. I was living in New York then. But we have to learn to get through that, and this will pass. You know, I'm convinced that the economy will get better. But in the interim, we're going to have to make some tough decisions.
I understand what you're saying. I work in social services. I work with low-income women. I have a very dear friend who's tried to kill herself 3 times in the last 2 weeks because she is off her meds. So I know what you're saying, and I care about it deeply. I just think we can't accept no to no more taxes. Somehow, we have to find a way. As much as I love my friend, and I want her to get her meds, and I think that's absolutely essential. At the same time, I know that the work that the commissions are doing is really essential too. The $170,000 that you give to the Women's Commission turns into $900,000 of services to children who are being abused in homes. So, you know, this is not a question.
Give me that statistic again.
I'm talking about the budget figures. If you give like $171,000 for the Commission for Women, and that turns into what is our total budget, $900,000 or $800,000, that's a lot of money that comes into this state that then provides real services to those families that you're talking about.
No, I'm not sure where
the most comes from. Nor where the activity comes from.
Yeah, I must have missed that in the presentation that there was a multiplier.
Well, it turns into it because the commission, with the base of the state funding, is able to go out and raise funds and provide services.
Oh, I see. So the $797,000 that came from other funds is exclusively conditioned upon the state's commission or commitment.
What I think is that what it does is by providing the stability of the commission, it allows the commission then to go out and get those other funds and to put those other services. Without the basic state funding, we have a short timeline, and we may or may not be able to raise enough money to continue the commission. And without the commission, those other things have to go somewhere else.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Are there other questions? For Anna. Thank you, Anna. Thank you again for coming up from Roseburg. And then coming back up to the top of the list, Addie Jean Haynes.
Hi, Addie.
Mr. Chair, I just have to say hello because she's from Portland, and most of you know I grew up in Portland before coming to Salem 30-some years ago.
Is this your younger neighbor that you were telling me about?
Yes, my name is Addie Jean Haynes. I'm from Portland, Oregon. This is my 9th year of serving on this commission, and I wouldn't have stayed here if I hadn't felt that I was needed. I have one more year to go, and I think I have to go. But this has been one of the most rewarding groups that I've been to, getting no kinds of anything, no mileage, no nothing, but just giving up my services. And the only thing that has sort of bothered me is many times our legislative people have not been attending our meetings enough for us to get direct information from them. So it would be helpful that whoever is appointed to our commission, that they are going to be committed to being a part of us. I've missed very, very few meetings. I'm retired, which is okay. And it's been nice. But in the past year, I've had problems. My husband's been ill. And I haven't been able to be in some of the things, but I do by phone. So I'm still connected. And I do respect what Rosalind has done for us.
And so the commission meetings do accept phone ends to attend the meeting. Good.
Yes.
Excellent.
So I attend meetings. If I can attend, so. I do attend by phone.
Good. Excellent.
So,
And I want to defend just for a moment those folks in the legislature. Many times I stand in absolute amazement when I see the commissions and committees that my colleagues are serving on, and when I hear where they're at on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from early in the morning until late at night, I say, wait a minute, how do you get from Bend to Portland and back again and attend these meetings? So sometimes it's very difficult, and I try to use the call, and I'm from Eastern Oregon, and so I try to use the call, and when I say Eastern Oregon, I mean way Eastern Oregon, Representative Johnson. Yeah, Idaho, right. So, but it's difficult. It's difficult sometimes for us to be at all the meetings.
Yes.
But I appreciate it. I appreciate your comment because I'm going to have to plead guilty. There are meetings in Portland that I'm supposed to be attending frequently that I don't attend as well. Senator.
Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry to do this, but I actually wanted to use part of your time just to make a comment since so many members have been commenting. One of the difficulties that I'm having in this process is that what Senator Winters said is very true. She's got probably in the neighborhood of $200 million in general funds and $300 million in federal funds to cut from her human services budgets. And the Oregon Health Plan becomes just a basic Medicaid plan and basic Medicaid plan probably without prescription drug coverage. One of the other committees I serve on is public safety. I toured McLaren last week. Our only choices with the Oregon Youth Authority are probably to close the last regional facility and probably eliminate a lot of the OIA grants, the only way we can possibly meet the targets for that, which means there are going to be a lot of young men that go back out on the streets. Many of those are probably going to commit very serious crimes. Many of those are going to end up back in our adult institutions for relatively long periods of time, costing the public. But at the same time, there's probably less than 2% in the general fund, probably somewhat less than 2%, maybe even 1.5%. It goes to such things as the commission, the Oregon Public Broadcasting, the Arts Commission, the Oregon Historical Society. And I don't want to have us lose sight of the fact, you know, as we face these dilemmas, that by taking away a whole lot of those things that add some qualities, which are very not much in expenditures for the state, we lose a lot. That doesn't mean they shouldn't face significant cuts. But I would hate to see all of those parties cut and what the impact would be on the state in terms of the overall qualities in the state. We remarked once before about the Arts Commission. The Cultural Trust was never meant to be created to be the savior of the Arts Commission. It's just kind of interesting timing that it's created a biennium before, just about a biennium before, we run into this problem. And it's probably the only thing that's going to save the Arts Commission, the fact that we've got that fundraising tool out there and there's enough money coming in there to basically keep their operations going. So I think all the members here made very clear the tough choices, but I think we still have to find some ways to keep in place some of those things that make this a special place to live.
Thank you very much, Senator Devlin. I appreciate the comments that have been made. I just needed to jump back over, and I'm going to use just a portion of your time while you're there, Ms. Haynes, to ask Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson, in the foundation and money raising activities, I know these are difficult times throughout, and I know that you work on many foundations. Is it going to be commensurately much more difficult for a a commission to raise money if people see that the general fund has been pulled? Is that a vote of no confidence on the legislature and therefore an automatic turn of the cold shoulder by the folks on the outside?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to answer your question in a little more oblique way. It's going to be brutally difficult to raise money in the private sector. As Senator Winters and the state continue to pull money out of state services, those folks are going to turn to the not-for-profits that provide services, and they in turn will turn to the philanthropic sector. So it's going to be brutally difficult to raise money. Having said that, I see an opportunity here, a clarion call to action, that were the legislature to provide enough money to make a mailing on behalf of the commissions that says we have lost our general fund. And if you value the work of the commission, be it women, Hispanic, black, now is the time to vote with your pocketbook to send us a check. So I see it both as a fundraising opportunity. OPB, when they, and I don't make any comparison here because OPB has the benefit of the bully pulpit of television and radio stations, but OPB, when their general fund was cut as a result of Special Session 5, went on to the airwaves and raised $1 million in a weekend. So I think that there is a fundraising opportunity, but by no stretch of the imagination do I want to sugarcoat how difficult it's going to be to raise money in the private sector, because the demand is going to be staggering.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I was afraid that I'm looking at a difficult time. Senator?
Mr. I'd like to just, and I can understand distance and those kinds of issues, but I would like to piggyback the comment that Ms. Haynes made, and that is legislators not attending the meeting, because we heard this also from the other advocacy commissions. And I would just like for us to maybe send a message to our colleagues that when they do sign up for a commission, that it is the expectation that they do at least attend some of the meetings. I think that from two standpoints. One, that the reason that they were included, and I go back a lot of years, was to provide a link between those commissions and this body.
Mm-hmm.
So that they were educating this body as to the issues and some of the things that the commissions were involved in, and to assist those commissions to work through these processes.
And to advocate.
And to advocate on behalf of them. So if they're not there...
Senator Crow has done today.
Yes. You know, if we're not there, we're not doing our part either. So I would just kind of like for, you know, as chair, that we send a message to both the House and the Senate and encouraging our members that when we sign up to work on a particular commission or commission, that it is expected that we be in attendance and that we're there as the advocate. If the Speaker or the Senate President ask us to serve, we can say then that no, we don't want to. But I think it's totally unfair to these bodies for us to put our name on their roster, and then we're not there to help them.
Thank you. Well said, Senator. Thank you very much, Ms. Haynes. Was there anything further?
No, I said thank you for listening, and I'm going to enjoy this next year.
Congratulations. Thank you for your service. Kathleen Joy from Multnomah County.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Joy. I am here today as a private citizen from Multnomah County, with bringing in my roots from Cave Junction and Redmond, because I don't think you hear too many voices of women from Cave Junction and Redmond. I am also the director of the Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, but I am here on my own vacation time today because I personally support the Commission for Women. I would encourage you to look at the letter which is in your packet, the commission packet. I'm on the flip side of Randall Edwards, right after letters, which start on page 25, to ask you to understand the strength of the AmeriCorps program that the Commission for Women has been administering for the last 2 years, to understand that we very, very clearly believe that this program will continue to be funded, and that if the Commission for Women were unable to accept continuing responsibility for the program, that it would leave Oregon, and it would have a detrimental effect on women and children across the state. I'm here because I share office space with the Commission for Women at Portland State University, and I'm here to kind of witness for the things that you've been told they do, that they actually do happen. It's easy for somebody to give you some figures and say that things don't happen, but in actual fact, in addition to the wonderful job they have done in bringing the Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children program to the strength that it has and to the strong partnerships that it has developed, it does other things. We're a small office. I'm within listening distance of everybody on their staff and our staff. And so I've been privileged to listen to a number of phone calls that have come in from across the state. I want you to know that those 350 calls that are in the books come on, thank you very much, a variety of topics. I want you to know that staff and interns and people working in the office take the time to deal with women on an individual basis, to deal with complex problems, to understand and ensure that they get access to the resources and information that they need. When I first started working with them, I don't know how anyone ever found the Commission for Women, but women from across the state find them and turn to them for information. I've watched and been part of putting together the information on educational forums on health and management. I've read their newsletter, and I'm a 2-year table captain of the Women of Achievement Dinner, so I guess that makes me one of the first friends of the Commission for Women and a friend for trees. I'd just like to throw that in. I'm also witness to the difficulties inherent in administering a commission with a single staff person. Prior to AmeriCorps, I watched the executive director work extraordinarily long hours to simultaneously provide services and generate revenue necessary to provide those same services. Now she has some additional help, but the long hours continue as the service needs rise. This is a commission that works long and hard to meet its commitment to the women of Oregon. It has done so without adequate state funding and should not be expected to generate all of its own funds to continue. I strongly urge you to restore their funding for the 2003-2005 biennium so that the vital services they provide through partnerships across the state will continue to benefit all Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Ms. Joy? Thank you. Appreciate it. And Marcia Kelly? Marcia Kelly?
It's Marcia. My mother spelled it a different way.
Okay.
There are two ways to spell it, so I answer to anything.
Thank you.
Chair Butler and member of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I am the lobbyist for the Women's Rights Coalition. Our organizational members are the American Association of University Women of Oregon, Delta Kappa Gamma, the National Women's Political Caucus of Oregon, the Older Women's League of Oregon, Oregon National Organization for Women, and the Salem YWCA. We also have individual members, and they come from every part of the state, from the AUW branches, and that's the Wallowa County branch and the Lake County branch, to the Tillamook Women's Political Caucus. We're not an I-5-driven organization. I am here today to advocate for the continuation of the Commission for Women, but our advocacy is for the Asian, Hispanic, and Black Affairs Commissions as well. In uncertain and difficult times, our advocacy program is even more important to those who can help themselves achieve a better life in our society if they know how to access programs designed for self-sufficiency. The commissions give that help and guidance. My remarks are centered on the Commission for Women. My personal history goes back a long way. I was in high school when then-Governor Mark Hatfield created the first commission. I had already been out of college for over a decade when, under Governor Attia, the commission was put into statute and became a state agency. There was one part-time employee. Organizations who were my members were very supportive of the first edition of Women in the Law publication. I remember going to an early, if not the first, Women of Achievement banquet, which was held at a Chinese restaurant in Portland. The event has grown and prospered over the years, and over the nearly two decades. It's been an outstanding affair, and the number of attendees has tripled. And I was looking at the women who have been honored in the presentation booklet, and I believe that there are probably, at a very minimum, 16 to 18 members of our member organizations have been honored. The Commission has a presence in dozens of communities through volunteers as well as through the AmeriCorps program volunteers who are working on issues surrounding family violence. And as you've heard, before the uncertainty of the Commission's funding was made known in February, they have applied for an extension of the grant, and that happened before all of the hurrah. And I did testify in front of the evening hearing on Ways and Means for the Advocacy Commission as well. The Commission has presented seminars on health issues affecting women through the grants that they've obtained. The number of dollars the Commission flexes with minimum staff is outstanding. Part of the success of the Commission has come through the dedication of the members of the Commission and their willingness to give of their time in creating and helping to raise the money for the Commission. Representing my organization, I spent many more hours in your counterpart committee down the hall. So, you know, you were talking about finding the quarters under the sofa. Well, there are some ways to do it. The House Revenue Committee meets to see where money can be raised. They also look at where it goes in the form of credits, deductions, and exclusions. Our organization, as a member of the Revenue Coalition, urges you to realize that many of the programs that you are agonizing over funding could be funded if we take a serious look at the projected $27 billion in tax expenditures we are scheduled to make in the 2003-2005 biennium. Serious criteria need to be set for exclusions, credits, and deductions listed in the tax expenditure book. There are good tax expenditures, but there are also tax expenditures we as a state have no business giving while some of our citizens are living in cars or on the streets. The advocacy commissions you have examined this week deserve to be funded. Oregon needs to set priorities. These commissions are a priority for the Women's Rights Coalition. Let me close with a quote from Jill Ruckelshaus, a noted civic and political activist from Washington State. It occurred to me when I was 13 and wearing white gloves and Mary Janes and going to dancing school that no one should have to dance backward all of their lives. Mr. Chair, Oregon will be dancing backward if we don't fund these commissions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Ms. Kelly? Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Appreciate it. Thanks for coming. Appreciate you.
Remember looking under the sofa covers of the tax credit.
Yes, the tax credits are important, I'm not certain what it looks like in the Senate right now, but I'm sure there are ongoing discussions in all portions of the building. But one of the things, I just say this, and I'm probably speaking out of turn, one of the things that we will be awaiting will be the co-chair's budget come April 15th or approximately that week when the co-chairs come forward with their budget, which they would like to have a balanced budget. And I'm not sure how that's going to look. But one thing I am fairly confident of is that if that budget is balanced within the current resources, which if it were a governor's budget, it'd have to by law, but I don't know that the co-chairs have any kind of mandate, particularly following this far end of the session. But I think the co-chairs' budget probably will, if it's budget on these current resources, probably will not have a snowball's chance of getting out of the building without additional resources. So that having been said, excuse me, it's incumbent upon each of the subcommittees in Ways and Means to do their absolute very, very best to balance or to bring some kind of a balanced budget within our subcommittees so that the co-chairs will have something to pivot from And that's why this testimony at this particular time is very, very vital and crucial. So that having been said, I appreciate your being here, and thank you very much.
One of the things that I observed in ways and revenue is when they were talking about the changes that happened in the federal law, and the Oregon Association of Certified Public Accountants came forward to the Revenue Committee and offered their help in smoothing the way to disconnect from the federal income tax, and that would pick up a fairly significant amount of money for tax deductions that would be hard to really, for me, justify. When we have people living on the streets or in cars, it's hard to justify giving a tax credit for or a tax deduction for the interest on your boat purchase or your, you know, if it's not dealing with you making money. And I believe that some of those things are being looked at quite carefully by other people in this building. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We excuse the Senate for meeting at this hour. Again, thank you all. Rosalind, did you have anything further to say before we finish up here? Thank you very kindly. We do appreciate your being here. With that, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 5508. Is that right? Where's my 5003. 5003. With that. And we will be picking up Treasury on Monday morning. Thank you. I'm going to be able to get back home this weekend.